Hello, hello everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Mamahood After Trauma. I am your host, Emily Cleghorn. This podcast is for mamas navigating childhood trauma while also walking through mamahood. Together, we will empower each other to connect with who we were created to be versus who we were told to be in our trauma. And I am so grateful that you have taken some time out of your day to listen in on this conversation. In this episode, I'm super excited to be welcoming Amelia Sherry. She is super passionate around working around food trauma. So welcome, Amelia.
Thank you for having me, Emily. This is my first live stream on Facebook, so I'm excited to talk with you and your audience and be live streaming.
Yeah. So let's get started. Share a little bit of your story and how you came to be working in the food trauma space.
Sure. So I was working as a pediatric dietitian, which was a second career for me. I initially worked in women's magazines doing writing about health and fitness, and that career was influenced by my earlier life, which was all about dieting and restricting foods, things like that. So as a pediatric dietitian, I started working to help kids and their parents have positive, normal, air quotes, relationships with food. And through that work, I discovered that it wasn't that easy for a lot of us, for a lot of people. And I actually really, I empathize with it. Like I understood why it was so hard because of my own experiences in the past. So healing those problems that are cropping up for parents when they're trying to support their child in having a positive relationship with food is really helpful. It makes it a lot easier for a mom to be able to guide their child, right, when they're in a good place with food. So it's almost like the first step before we even talk about, okay, now what should we do with the kids, right? So getting in a good place ourselves is very rewarding and very healing when it comes to food, and also has this like additional benefit of helping our children so that they, you know, grow into to be able to eat in positive ways, stay nourished, all those kinds of good things.
Awesome. So let's dive in. What exactly is food trauma?
Okay, so I'm going to describe it from my point of view. There may be other dietitians who have other very important and valid, you know, descriptions, but the way I think about food trauma in my work, there could be a spectrum, but it could be one example would be having something like food poisoning, right? Mm-hmm. This is something I've had patients and children have had sort of inexplicable aversions or like refusals to eat certain food. You know, some kids get really almost panicky or they're just so adamant. And we've been able to, I've learned to go back and, you know, with mom and start to think about why this might be, especially if it's just like one random food. And if they're eating that texture, say if it's something crunchy, like raw carrots, but like they can eat chips, which are crunchy, or they can eat other raw vegetables, but carrots, they're just like a strong no. We might come to find out that maybe the child, you know, had an incident where they were choking on a carrot when they were younger. That's really traumatic and it can leave a lasting impression and create like a very strong aversion to that food. Same thing with food poisoning. Sometimes we don't even remember having had an experience of getting really sick on something, but we just know we never want to eat it again. I, without giving, you know, making this too upsetting or gross, I literally want to drive on the other side of the street when I pass this restaurant that I know I got sick from. I had like a trauma there, right? I was sick for 2 days with some sort of unidentified food poisoning, and it created It didn't create a long-term problem for me in terms of never being able to eat a certain food, but I certainly cannot go into that kind of restaurant ever again. Very minor. The consequences of that are very minor. However, if it's over a food that's really one particular food or food group that's really integral to our diet, then it might be, it's something that we want to work on and uncover and heal. That would be a really sort of more straightforward, I think, kind of food trauma. Another kind of food trauma would be just not having enough food, especially children and adults, but not having enough food in your childhood, not having access to enough food, not having enough food consistently. So if your caregiver just wasn't either, you know, maybe they had a lot going on in their lives, a lot of their own personal stresses, and they weren't, or even financial stresses, and they weren't able to provide for you as a child. Maybe sometimes they did, but maybe it wasn't consistent. That can be very traumatic and have a really negative impact on how we act and feel about food and our own access to food. This is where it might be even more applicable to more people. That sort of, it's called a food insecurity. So it could be very literal. There is not enough food here in our home. Can also be psychological. So if you have a parent that was putting you on a lot of diets because they're concerned about your weight, or even if they were concerned about your weight, you know, going up in ways they were uncomfortable with, they might have restricted food, and that could be traumatic as a child. If you're hungry and they won't let you have something, if they felt like you weren't big enough or growing enough, they might have forced you to eat food. That can be traumatic. So these things create problems again in terms of having a normal relationship with food where we can enjoy it and feel comfortable eating it and eat intuitively with our body. It could also be like self-imposed. So if we've been constantly putting ourselves on diets, that can be a sort of food trauma. If we have these thoughts in our head where we shouldn't be eating something, we shouldn't be eating so much of it, and it's just coming up every time we're presented with the food, that can be a really negative sort of lasting impact on us that can follow us for a long time. How does that sound?
That's very clear. So for me, when I was a little girl, I was restricted from eating food. And so now when I feel like I don't have enough food in my house, I'm kind of like a squirrel. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of like a squirrel in that I will buy more than maybe I need, but it's to have security in food. So that's one way that food trauma can have a lasting impact. What are some other ways that food trauma can show up in our lives that we may not necessarily pinpoint that food trauma is the cause?
Good question. Do you mean from mother to child or just individually? What?
In general. So it could be mom to child.
Right.
Or, so, yeah.
So one very important part of having a positive relationship with food is the concept of trust. So there has to be a lot of self-trust, a lot of body trust, meaning that you need to be able to listen to your body in terms of how hungry you're feeling, mm-hmm. how physically empty you're feeling, how full you're feeling, how physically full you're feeling, and also how satisfied you are, which is a lot more subjective and about like really how much you enjoyed the food. Mm-hmm. If you are not trusting yourself, then it can be really hard to eat in a way that's going to support you nutritionally, help you keep you at your natural weight set point. You might be way more, so say if your parent didn't trust you around food, they said they were going to determine how much or how little, not you, That destroys your own self-trust. And mm-hmm. as you grow older, you might be constantly, without, you know, rebuilding that self-trust, you might be constantly looking to the outside world to figure mm-hmm. out what's okay to eat, in air quotes, because everything's okay to eat as long as it's not going to poison you and you're not allergic to it. Okay. And you might also be looking to the outside world in terms of how much to eat. Like, so that would look like constantly looking at food labels, limiting yourself to just what's on the label, mm-hmm. Investing in diet books or diet plans and listening to those sort of limits and rules mm-hmm. instead of listening to your body. So getting up from the table when you still are hungry or trying to, you still want to eat, like it, you know, it would show up like that, for example. In children who aren't trusted, they tend to lose touch with their body as well, which like it's very, very common. So if anyone is doing this right now as a mom, like join the club. This is really common. We are trying to help our children. It comes from a good place. But when we sort of override them listening to their body by saying mm-hmm. you've had enough, stop, or you didn't have enough, eat more, that can cause them to think like, oh, wait, something's wrong with my body. I shouldn't listen to it because I am hungry. But mom, who I love dearly, you know, is saying, mm-hmm. don't, you're not hungry. So that lessens their own trust in their body. And it might show up. So sometimes it's not just with portions, but it's with types of food. So like parents will often restrict food with sugar in it, or sweet tasting foods, or high fat foods, or high calorie foods that absolutely taste delicious. And just because we hear from mom, or we even tell ourselves that they're no good for us, we still want to eat them and they're enjoyable. And that makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. So a child might hide that food. You know, they might sneak that food because they're still going to want to enjoy it, but now they don't feel comfortable. There's a lot of shame mm-hmm. involved. So they don't feel comfortable eating it in front of the people who have told them that's really not good for you and I don't want you eating it. So it could show up like that as well.
So what are some ways that we can create a healthy relationship with food if we have some food trauma?
Great question. You can work with a dietitian who is, I would say, who has experience with intuitive eating or responsive feeding, which is another thing you can Google and look up. There's excellent advice there if you look at responsive feeding. You don't need to actually even sign up for coaching. You can just start by reading it. Primarily, I think what you want to focus on is understanding what your history with food is. Mm-hmm. I have a book in Diet Proof Your Daughter. So in there is a workbook, and a lot of those questions aren't about, you know, let's make meal plans, let's do this. It's all about thinking about your own history with food. So starting to kind of unpack what, you know, how your parents thought about food, what they mm-hmm. prioritized, was it health, was it pleasure, did they trust you, did they let you figure out how much or how little, that can help. If that is painful or challenging for you, then I highly recommend getting the support of a therapist that can help you work through those feelings. It's not always necessary, it's just if you feel unsafe when those things come up, then definitely get some support. Reading a book like Intuitive Eating can be helpful, by Evelyn Tribbley and Elise Reich. It's very easy to Google intuitive eating, where I highly recommend going to the book called Intuitive Eating, which is the most comprehensive. That can give you a lot of insight into your relationship with food and how you might want to, almost like what I do a lot in my practice is almost like reparent moms mm-hmm. around food. So sort of give them what we all really do need when we're younger in order to grow into a healthy, normal, happy eater, because happiness is a very big, and pleasure is a very big part of being a good eater. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that looking into intuitive eating might be one of the first steps, and then reaching out for help if it's a little overwhelming for you to kind of do that introspection.
Yeah, there are a ton of resources out there that are excellent for helping you to heal food trauma or any type of trauma. So don't feel like you need to walk it alone, struggle through by yourself, because there are a ton of resources out there.
I think, sorry to interrupt you. I think another thing that just came to mind is really important is that a lot of us are continuing with those sorts of restrictive natures, or thinking about health in a very limiting and diety type way, which is not compatible with good mental health or physical health, as it turns out. So if you may very well be following those patterns in your life right now that were set up by your parents, either following them still or revolting against them by overeating or eating out of tune with your body, which is actually the more common result of being mm-hmm. restricted. You might be living those out and not even realizing it, because we live in a culture that sort of promotes it. Yeah, it absolutely promotes it. It pressures us all the time to eat in that way, even though it's extremely dysfunctional. So it would make perfect sense to sort of have this kind of trauma when you're younger, and then just still be sitting in it, because it's so compatible with the culture, you know, that's out mm-hmm. there, that tells us not only is this the way to glamour and, you know, being like this ideal person physically, but it's also getting really gray, because it's also the pressure to do it in order to be healthy, which is, mm-hmm. you know, maybe you don't really necessarily care about the way you look, but now you're pressured to eat in this restrictive way because everyone's telling us it's the only way to be healthy, which is absolutely not true, and hard for people to kind of believe and accept. That's why there is like a lot of work that needs to be done around thinking about these things. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. What would you say to a mama or a listener who is just starting on their healing journey? What is one step that they could take today to help them move forward?
That's a great question. One of the first questions I ask every client that I have, patient, child, adult, mom, dad, is what their goal is in terms mm-hmm. of their eating, or in terms of if they're coming to me because they want to change their eating. I always ask them why. What is the result they want to see? And asking yourself that question is important. And usually it can just kind of really start to get you thinking about these things. And then many people respond by saying they want to either be healthy or mm-hmm. or lose weight. Mm-hmm. And those questions you go even deeper in, and mm-hmm. even on pen and paper, I'm a huge fan of journaling. Ask yourself, you know, what does, for the, if it's to be thin, you can ask yourself why, you know, how is your life going to change or improve? What are you getting out of it? And what will be the cost of doing that? Say following, you know, exercising a certain amount of time every day, limiting your calories, only eating paleo or vegan or whatever, what will be the cost? And are you going to get out of it what you want, what the thing you're looking mm-hmm. for? And health-wise, it is to say, it's really ask yourself, what would that look like for you? Because health is a very vague word. And so if we're saying, well, I'm meaning this way because I want to be healthy, we're just digging into it more and saying, what does that mean to you? What will it look like for you? That can help us. It's like a small step, but it's also a huge step, because it sort of get us thinking about what we really want out of our relationship mm-hmm. with food. And how are the things we're doing, which is what I do a lot in my workbook, is like, how is what you're doing helping you? with mm-hmm. that goal? And how is it hurting you, you know, with your goal? And if you're thinking about your child and how you're maybe putting rules and limits on them, how is that helping them? Is it helping them eat better? Is it helping them have a better relationship with food? Is it helping them feel less stressed at mealtimes? Or how might it, and it may very well be helping you, but you also want to think about how is it hurting you? Mm-hmm. Is or your child, is it stressful? Does it make mealtime less mm-hmm. connective and happy place? Is it causing limits in their diet? Is your child now refusing certain foods? So kind of going down the road of what you want and whether or not you're getting it is a good start. Hopefully it's not too big of a start, but that's something you could do on your own with pen and paper.
Yeah. I always tell my clients that we can't change what we don't acknowledge. So if you're unaware of what's hindering you or what the problem is, it's hard to change if you're unaware, right? Mm-hmm. So that awareness is key.
Absolutely. Yeah.
In getting the ball rolling.
And even if you have bringing that awareness to like a very more specific situation, if you have a child and you're telling them no to certain, say no seconds or no to this cookie, treat, candy, whatever, you can ask yourself why. Why am I doing it? Or why is watching them eating it making me uncomfortable? Mm-hmm. And that can also help you sort of bring up these deeper feelings about what is making you uncomfortable. Are you concerned that they're going to gain weight? Are you concerned that they're going to, you know, get sick mm-hmm. and die, which people have said to me, like, if they don't eat enough of this, you know, they're not going to be healthy or not going to grow. And, you know, those thoughts unacknowledged can continue to cause damage. When we talk about them in nutrition therapy, we can acknowledge that, like, actually, this is not actually true. You know, that if they mm-hmm. don't eat this, they're going to be very sick. Or if we do ease up and let them eat more, if they need to, that it's going to, you know, be harmful. It's actually quite the opposite. It's very beneficial. So yeah, when something's making you uncomfortable at the table, instead of leaning in with another comment, sort of stepping back and asking yourself, why was the thought there, can be really helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. Just pausing for a minute. The power of the pause.
Yes. Underrated.
Yeah, it really is. In our very rushed society. Where can people connect with you if they want to speak further or talk to you about something that came up as they listened?
Sure. If you go to my website, nourishher2h's.com, you can, if you noodle around on there, there's definitely buttons where you could book a free call with me if you just want to get right to it and talk, which a lot of people do. If you wanted just to get to know me a little bit and kind of think more about some of the things that came up today, you can go to the blog. I have a blog. There's articles about what it means to be healthy, approaches, positive food parenting approaches. And if you are not into reading, you can also download an audio guide to helping your child have a positive relationship with food. You can access a chapter of my book, all kinds of good things there.
Awesome. So I will include a link to Amelia's website in the show notes of this episode or in the description of the YouTube video. So feel free to connect with her and begin or continue your healing journey with your food trauma.
Yes, I'd love to hear from you. And I just want to say, if I can help you, I would be so happy to refer you to someone else who can. So please, 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 please reach out to me. You're going to do yourself so much by getting a little support, even if it's just reading, you know, a pamphlet or something like that.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you, Emily.
Oh, no, that's okay. That is the end of this week's Mamahood After Trauma podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard, please hit the subscribe button on whichever platform that you're listening on, and like the video, share the episode, share it with somebody who needs to hear it. And we will see you all next week.
Bye.